Welcome to the FNO InsurTech Podcast, a place where movers and shakers from all points within the insurance ecosystem gather and discuss all things InsurTech. Here are your hosts, Lee Boyd and Rob Beller.
Hey, podcast world, welcome to another edition of FNO InsurTech. That's right, your single source for any piece of information you would ever need about InsurTech.
Yeah.
Regardless of what Sheffy Ben Huda might say.
this is the only place.
Regardless what Sheffy might want you to believe, this is the only place.
This is the only place.
And it's free.
Yeah.
Which is another way of saying you get exactly what you pay for when you listen to.
You can't complain that you were overcharged.
You can't complain. Or that you were undercharged.
Yeah. Nobody's ever complained about that one. They should.
No one's ever written us and said, why don't you charge for your podcast?
Why don't you charge for your content? It's so good.
It's so amazing.
I'm so upset that you don't charge. No one's ever said that.
We do have a groupie.
Yeah, she's not recommended that either.
No. And we do have a fan, JJ.
Yeah, we do. JJ. Hey, JJ. How are you,
hey, JJ.
But
no one ever says, you know, I was running through my budget over the weekend.
Yeah.
And I have $12 left over at the end of the month. And I'd like you guys to have 75 cents of that. Never happened.
We've not done that.
No, that has
In 250 episodes, that has never happened.
250 episodes. No one has ever, or has anyone ever called and said, hey, let us sponsor you.
Yeah.
But not exactly.
Not really. Manscaped offered one time back in 2018.
I don't remember that.
We got an email from Manscaped and they offered.
Oh, that's right.
They offered and you were like,
In-kind
trade out. And you're like, no, we're not going to do Manscaped. I said, I don't know.
Lee, you were kind of excited by that. We're kind of
hairy guys. I don't know.
You were into the Manscaped concept.
Well, you still are. The shoe fits.
You still are. In fact, have you been losing some weight in your shoulders?
Thank you for that, Rob. Let me tell you something, Rob. Let me tell you, we've been doing this podcast for all these years, and I think the most fun is before and after these recordings when we just get to chit chat.
Exactly. How sad is that?
I mean, just that we were laughing so hard right before we did this intro. I mean, I don't know. We talked about 10 different subjects, and Alicia's bouncing up and down from the Red Bull. I mean, it's the most fun.
Unfortunately, we don't share with our audiences what makes us laugh the most.
Oh, should we? Al's trying to get us to record it.
I'll tell you what. Let's leave it up to our audience.
Yeah.
Go to your email. What's our email address?
It doesn't get used. I don't know. FNO.
Alicia, do we have an email address? We do. Alicia will come on in a second to tell us. Thank you. And send us an email and tell us that you want to hear us blabber.
More Robin Lee.
The problem with that is this, Lee. I think it's funny for you and me and Alicia and Al, but outside of that very, very small circle, it's probably not.
I've talked to like three people who listen to the podcast and they all like our banter. They enjoy it.
I get that feedback frequently. Yeah. Because they go on to say that the meat of your thing is, it's very fatty.
That's funny.
You have to really trim the podcast quite a bit.
Yeah, you got to get in to the meat. But I tell you what, we have a great podcast today.
Oh my gosh, we have the leanest podcast that we've ever had.
Yeah,
because we don't only have one senior executive from Verisk, we have two.
Yeah,
with us today, we have the president of Verisk Property Estimating Solutions and the chief product officer from same company on a podcast together.
we have with us today, Aaron and David coming on to talk all things about Exactware. We're going to talk about the conference. We're going to talk about what they're doing, about the products. We get into a detailed conversation about AI and what that means and how they're working with that. And I'm always excited to have bigwigs on from the Verisk Corporation. And Aaron, this will be a second time on. Big fan of Aaron. Of course, big fan of David, too. Big fan of them both.
Yeah, that's Aaron Brunko, president, and David Obert, chief product officer, Verisk Property Estimating Solutions, formerly known as Exactware, formerly known as Xactimate, et cetera.
Yeah.
And now, and for some time, a big part of what happens at Verisk happens here at in Property Estimating Solutions. So without further ado, here's our long anticipated episode with Aaron Brunko and David Obert from Verisk Property Estimating Solutions. Hey, everybody, we are here. We have a twofer today. Okay. So here at FNO InsurTech, you think, oh, they're going to have a guest on. No, today we have two guests. So you get two episodes for the price of one, which is really terrific. And we have friends. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely.
Okay, very good. Okay.
David
friends,
didn't say
friends
anything.
Coming to us all the way from.
I'm on board too.
And new friends.
Yeah.
Coming to us all the way from Salt Lake City. Right? Did I get that right?
Yes,
okay.
Sir.
Okay. Yep. And
we're in Lehigh, if it matters.
Lehigh, a little south.
We have Aaron Brunko, president, and David Obert, chief product officer, with us today. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
I just left
off where you work. Don't worry
you
about
did.
It.
You did.
Everybody
luckily
knows where
we covered it. We covered it in the intro.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate you having us on.
We've been trying to do this podcast for a long time, so we're excited to finally get to it. And David, we've never had you on before.
No, and I'm excited to be here.
This is you're a first timer.
I am a first timer. That is very true.
Yes. Brunko's an old timer.
He's an old timer. He's gonna lead out, man. He's gonna show me the way.
It's been here for a while. Right. He just took a little bit of a leisurely tour.
I did.
In a different vertical for a little
while. Yeah.
I was calling back.
If you are involved in property claims at all, I guarantee you know who Aaron Brunko is. Okay. I guarantee you know the company he works for that starts with a V and ends with a K. Verisk, in case you couldn't guess.
Yeah.
And
good job.
But you might not know David Obert, but he's been there for a super long time. So let's start with you, David. What do you do at Verisk Property Estimating Solutions?
So what do I do? So what do I do now? I lead out our product teams creating amazing products. That is ultimately what I do. I live in the land of roadmaps, of strategy, of go-to-market strategies, product launches. That's kind of where I live now. And it's where I've lived for quite some time, actually. Aaron saw something in me that he felt like it would be good for me to jump into this role and help lead out all of our products for Property Estimating Solutions, Exactware. And really focus in and help us create the next level of Xactimate, Xact Analysis, claim experience, and so on.
What a cool job. What a cool thing to do.
It is the awesomest.
But he didn't find you just nowhere, right?
No.
He's been having coffee with you for years.
He has. Yeah, actually, you know, when I was hired here at Xactware at the time, when I was hired, I actually replaced Aaron. So Aaron, QA position. Yep. I interviewed for your QA position many, many years ago. This was 18 years ago. Interviewed for a QA position and received it because Aaron Brunko decided that he was going to move over into our sales organization and thought, hey, I got the sales itch. I got to go get some sales on. And,
yeah.
And Aaron jumped over there and I actually backfilled for him. So I've been following him around for 18 years now, which has been awesome.
My goodness. Okay. That is really neat.
So it's good to know that we have the next president of Property Estimation.
It's right there.
So guess who I went to work for in that sales group?
Who is that?
Somebody that I have a lot of respect for today.
Okay.
Somebody who ran our sales department at the time. He lives here in Utah.
I know. He does.
He's a great guy.
He's a tall guy.
I don't even know who. I don't even know who it is.
You may have seen him at the other conference. Is that how?
Go on.
Scott Sevier.
Was it really?
Yeah, it was my boss. That's
Scott Sevier is like one of my very favorite people on earth.
He's a good guy.
I really absolutely love Scott Sevier.
He's a good dude.
That's right. Whenever,
I didn't know that.
Whenever I'm talking about how much I love Aaron Brunko and and that brand of his, Lee will bring up Scott Sevier.
I didn't know that Scott ran the sales side there.
Yeah, he ran the sales group for Exactware at the time.
Well, that is cool. Yes, he is, as I said, is one of my very favorite people. One of my very favorite people. Yeah.
Okay, so David, that's a great intro. Thank you, Mr. Brunko.
Yes, sir.
It's your turn to tell us what's your latest job at this organization?
So it's changing. It changes from what you might have historically looked at the guy that's over Exactware. We are trying to be much more focused on bringing complementary benefit to the industry across Verisk, right? If you think about the various assets that we have, a good chunk of my time is spent not only just on focused on the Exactware family product, but also on where there's complementary benefit to and from other Verisk offerings. And so that's something that we're trying to be more intentional about as
the
organization. If you go back to even less than 18 months ago, we had entirely different leadership in the organization than we have today. Wow. Just about every leader is new in role within the last 18 months.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Fascinating to look at how many changes have happened within the organization. One of which we'll talk about is some of the changes that you saw in Elevate. Right. Mm-hmm. And the different venue, the different kind of
program.
Yeah. That's a great place to jump in. You mentioned Elevate. We wanted to do a little look back at Elevate now that you've had a chance to kind of live with how it went, to digest it. Like you said, I don't think it's a small thing that it was in a different venue.
That was a big thing.
That was a very meaningful thing. So for those of us who've gone to most all of the Elevates in the past, they've pretty much been in one location, in one hotel in Salt Lake City. Yeah. And everybody got used to that. And it very intentionally changed the location, correct?
We did. It's part of a signal of a new Verisk, in many respects, a new Exactware from that standpoint. And I appreciate tradition. I like the tradition aspect of things, but to a certain extent, when the industry is asking for us to change, if you think about what we've done with the open ecosystem, which is a pretty important part of our message.
Super. Yeah.
With Verisk, right? And offering choice, letting customers choose who they bring in so that they can get the job done in a unique and novel way that they care about. We don't want to stand in the way of that. We want to enable it as opposed to impede it. And so that's, you know, one of the additional attributes that we're focused on. And so when we talk about that at Elevate, we talk about across a variety of called business units within Verisk. And then one of the things that we did is we brought together the solutions gallery. Before we had the user experience gallery where we'd only talk about ourselves, right? And that was all that we would showcase.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, the majority of it was solutions gallery with our ecosystem partner. But that shouldn't shouldn't distract folks from thinking, well, does that mean that you're not going to innovate? And that's not
your
intention is. Well, the intention is for us to continue to innovate in around our core distinctives, but also to allow for the complementary benefit from other providers. Should an insurer or even a contractor or independent adjusting firm find that if I tack this additional capability, we get outsized benefits. And if that's the case, we want to help with it as opposed to get in the way.
David, I want to talk a little more about the conference, but I just wrote down working with products that complement the ecosystem of Exactware. Is that your focus? Is your focus working with other products and creating new ones? What is your focus as the at that role?
Yeah, I mean, it's both, right? I mean, the goal is that we want to add complementary benefits where it makes sense for our customers. I mean, ultimately, we want to help our customers do business.
Yeah.
That's how they operate. That's how they're profitable. That's how they can push things forward. So from our perspective, we want to add functionality features within our own products. We obviously, that's a big part of our role within the industry. I mean, we're a fundamental piece of the industry and we take that seriously. So as we look at our stewardship and what we should do, we innovate, we continue to push the boundaries of what we're capable of. However, there are circumstances where it's not one of, to Aaron's point, it's not one of our core distinctives. So instead, we leverage our partners and say, hey, there's desire for this specific type of functionality. Who can actually help us with this and help our customers by virtue of their functionality and incorporate that into our ecosystem as well?
And part of the intentionality with that is not doing it within a vacuum or requiring some kind of mediator between us, right? Mm-hmm. So as an example before, the position was, well, we had to have like a big carrier come and say, we need you to do this and we need you to do that, versus us working together with an ecosystem partner to say, how can we make our shared customers' lives easier, better, faster? How do we do it cheaper for them?
Yeah.
There's plenty of white space as opposed to fighting over the same old things versus let's pick some of these other problems, which we all know the industry has, and start working together to solve that and make it more efficient and improve the quality at the same time.
Was that a big focus at the conference this year? Was that one of the big things you looked at?
It was. And just having an open and candid conversation with our ecosystem partners to say, what's not working well? What are the challenges that you have? What do we need to take accountability and responsibility for to improve, to help you be a better innovator where perhaps we're getting in the way, right? And some of it's even legal issues pertaining to privacy of data, right? Where one particular segment wants us to export information to them that we can't export because we're not the originator, nor are we have to get permission. So coming up with creative solutions that still keep things moving within or steward of responsibility, and at the same time, allows for fast innovation. That's part of what we're trying to accomplish.
One of the things that I'll highlight that Aaron wouldn't say, but I'm going to say it for him because I think this is important. This shows the relationship that we have with our ecosystem partners too. Aaron actually got in front of all of our ecosystem partners and he said, all right, guys, throw rocks. Like, let's hear it. I want to hear the challenges that you're running into, what challenges you're having with Verisk, what challenges you're having in the industry. I mean, he right out of the gate went, and that's how he started his segment of the conversation. And it was awesome. And our partners leaned in significantly to have that conversation. Yeah, well, they started.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, the rocks started being flung. But it was really good. It highlights the relationship that we have with our ecosystem partners. This is a true partnership. It's not something where we feel like, hey, you know, you're just a third party that we kind of work with on the side.
Yeah.
It's a true partnership. The fact that Aaron was able to get up and make that kind of statement and get candid feedback from our partners shows the true partnership that we have with our third parties.
Doesn't it take some courage, though, to go from the position that Exact was in several years ago, where they really held the keys to the kingdom, and correct me if I'm wrong, to saying we're going to be an open ecosystem, it takes, I mean, some real leadership to say we're going to change the way that we operate. And
Yeah, it does. It, to a certain extent, but also what's going through my mind right now is it also takes an understanding of the consequence of not doing that. And what that opportunity cost might look like for the industry. And, you know, I again, I have a responsibility for Verus, but I also have a responsibility to the industry. And so making the choices that put both parties in a better position in the future for the sake of the industry, who has had massive challenges over the last couple of years in terms of combined ratio profitability, it's important we work together in that sense so that insurance can be affordable, so that, you know, insurance companies can be successful. That's important to all of us, because if they're not, this doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah, we don't exist. Right. We exist because of that structure.
Yeah.
And like you were saying, David, for many of these ecosystem partners, having a cooperative relationship with you is critical to their existence. It's existential, right?
100%.
You've invested in having an entire pillar, your product group, dedicated and focused on the ecosystem. So we have, you know, individuals that roll up through David that think about how we better productize, not just connect, but integrate in a more meaningful way within our product group.
Yeah, I mean, we've got an entire team. That's all they're focused on, is that those integration partner relationships. And I mean, they're on the phone talking to them. They're working through, you know, implementations and integration with them every single day, because it's such an important part of the way that we feel like we need to do business in the industry. And how we, again, how we help others do their business.
Go ahead, Aaron.
And then it extends. I mean, think about your own organization. You guys have software developers.
Right.
And you solve for interesting and unique problems within your organization. To a certain extent, this also enables you in that front, right? To where perhaps it's access to information. It's, you know, an API driven layer where you can get better information and or, you know, a response to drive an action, right, that improves the outcome of your work product.
Yeah.
And so it's this multiplication effect where we are improved, our ecosystem partners, and also our customers have the opportunity. And that's where I think greater efficiency and quality is driven forward within the market.
Yeah. I think back to, I want to say it was 4 years ago, Mike Bolton standing on the stage, giving his presentation, and says, you know, we are an open ecosystem. We are open. And I remember him coming off the stage and we had a podcast with him. And I said, really? No way. And I think, I do think we were a little bit rougher. Like, I mean, you say that, but is that true? And I look back at 4 years and I'm thinking, nobody talks about that anymore. You have moved past that. I really think that you have moved past that perception of they're closed, you can't integrate with them, they don't work well with you. You've moved past that. And I think that's great. I think that's really good. Now, I'm sure there are reasons that you don't integrate. I remember talking to some people and saying, you know, it's all about data. We got to make sure that the data is taken care of and that we do it and that we're smart about it. We want to be methodical in the way we do it. I understand all those things. That has to be there.
So following up on the conversation about the conference, let's talk a little bit about, because I think it's the first conference, Aaron, that you've been fully installed as the leader. Is that correct?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. So what was exciting? What worked? What didn't work? And just a little rundown of what you think was achieved.
So what worked? I think the continued collaboration amongst our customers, networking, I think, is important. We'd heard that a lot of folks come to the conference to get business done. And so that's one of the ways that we feel we can facilitate that process without making the conference all about us, right? It certainly is a Verus driven conference. But to the extent that those network effects can continue to grow, that's something that we really do focus on helping to facilitate. What I thought went well was some of the speakers that we had that came and you know, covered some interesting topics all the way around innovation, et cetera, and then some of the different meaningful kind of subgroups, if you will. So we had some of our former chief claims officers involved in some of the discussions.
That's great.
Ken Rosen, if you know Ken Rosen.
We do.
Yeah.
Eric Brandt.
Eric Brandt, right. There's a number of CCOs that came to Elevate and provided their own feedback and context around what we can do as an industry. One of the things that I thought was a highlight was Ken Rosen's C-level roundtable that he had. I got a lot of really positive feedback on that from a variety of executives in the industry who are able to attend that.
Yeah, that's great.
I bet.
Had somebody said, you better do this next year.
Yeah.
You set a new precedent. You better do this next year. So that's something we're excited about doing.
Yeah, I bet that was an opportunity for some really great insight. Right.
I thought it was interesting just in terms of venue. If you recall, we would have meetings on the third floor.
Fourth floor.
But you had to run back and forth. Yeah. You had to go. Uh-huh. I mean, you got your steps in. It was literally just right outside of the various sessions that we would hold. So you could literally go down the escalator and then connect into one of the meeting rooms to have a private meeting, which seemed to work pretty well. Feedback, though, was we didn't have enough signage, so people were always lost. They weren't able to find where they needed to go. And so there's just little kind of amenities and let's just call it
little tweaks,
logistics that needed to.
Yeah.
That could also have to do with that they weren't look that they need to stop looking at their phone for long enough to see a sign.
Yeah, that's a way to respond to that survey. It's on you, not us.
Yeah.
But I think overall, I thought it was successful. Yeah. We're always trying to level up and, you know, do a better job for our customers. And, you know, again, it's trying to find the right balance between it all.
Will this be the new venue moving forward? Is there a plan? Has it already been announced for next year?
Yeah, so it'll likely be the same venue, but we're open. We're open to figuring out more efficient ways to continue to engage.
Yeah.
People always complain about Utah, especially those that, you know, the alcohol and
than the absolute beauty, I think is way better than the alcohol, I would say, but whatever.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. So the ski trip that we do typically is always well received. And so
did you get your invitation to that one, Lee?
I missed my invitation this year.
I didn't see my invitation.
I missed it last year. All right, you are
formally invited to be.
Okay, hey, there we go.
Come on.
Okay. You know, and I'll tell you why we ask. For what we get paid to do this podcast, we need all the freebies we can get our hands.
All the swag. That's right. I do love flying to Utah in the winter. I love flying. I'm in Texas, so I fly over the mountains. It's beautiful. I love Utah. I think it's a great place. And yeah, it makes sense because all of your sales, I mean, your building is just down the road, 20 miles or down the road.
How many conferences can we go to in Texas or in California or in the more popular destinations?
I love the fact that we get to go
to your beautiful city in that beautiful environment once a year. I always made sure that I got a hotel room with the window that looked out at the mountains.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, just beautiful, right? Yeah. In the winter. And so please don't change that. That's my vote.
I love it.
One man's vote. So let's first of all, congratulations on the conference. We've heard great things from people who attended. They were very pleased and excited by the energy that was generated by it. And I hope you guys were too.
Yeah, absolutely. Always.
Let's move on to AI. And I want to do a little intro here. So last November, Aaron and I had the opportunity to attend the Property Information Report Conference in Laguna Beach, or Laguna Niguel, California.
I'm sorry.
And yeah, it was.
I think it was at the Reds.
Someone had to do it. I'm glad
it happened. It happened to be at a 5-star resort.
Maybe just sitting here, but whatever. That's I'm glad you had a good time.
On the ocean in magnificently beautiful weather. But that's not why we went. Oh, no.
Of course not.
No. And so Aaron and I were invited to a dinner. In fact, it was a Verisk dinner. I don't know why I was invited, but I was. And because we sat friends. Next to each other. We sat next to each other at the you're not that important end of the table.
Aaron's like, thank you for that.
Aaron only sat there because Aaron was sat there because he got there late. I was sat there immediately.
We were in the claim section.
Yeah, you sit down
right.
there.
And we start talking. I don't know how we got on the subject, but we start talking about AI. And for the next several hours, Aaron Brunko, in an incredibly generous move, spent time giving me a dummy's introduction to AI that was absolutely remarkable and stunning. And as Lee said before we started recording today, I've told this story more times than I can count to people about really remarkable it was and eye-opening it was, because he didn't just show me the canned stuff that even I can grasp, but all this wild stuff of interesting platforms and ideas and opportunities that are out there, not just to do with claims, but just in general. But we did spend a lot of time on claims. And one of the things that led me to understand was, you guys are into this. You're spending a lot of time on it. It's very important to you as more than a hobby. And so let's talk about AI and why. I'll start with the big question. And then we have a lot of other questions too, but why the deep, intense interest in it? And I let me just say one last thing, and that is, I know this, David, because I listened to one of your talks, that AI's been around for a long time, and you guys are using AI, like rules-based AI is here and has been here. But what you guys are thinking about is even way beyond that. So can we talk about that for a few minutes and share some of why the grand interest in it?
So I would say that, I mean, so I was listening to a podcast relatively recently and a comment was made that if people 100 years ago looked at what you were doing today, would they consider it work? I mean, let that sink in for a second, right? Is if you're sitting in front of a keyboard, typing on it on a keyboard, working, quote unquote, working,
right?
Work 100 years ago in the 1920s, I doubt it. They'd be like, "Are you for real? This is work." Let me weld this together, or I don't even know. Let me go dig some more coal. But if you think about, and I think this is why we nerd up so much about AI. Think about what it's going to look like 100 years from now. So if you look at 100 years from now, what is what we do or what they're doing in 100 years going to be perceived by us to be work? I don't know. I don't know what that looks like. But then you start asking the question, how much is AI going to play a role into that work in 100 years? I don't know. But I think that it's our onus to be ahead of that a little bit, especially as a technology platform provider. We need to be driving that into the next 100 years. And that's why I I don't want to speak for Aaron, but that's, at least from my perspective, that's why I care about it, is because that's where we're going. It's going to fundamentally shift what we perceive as work, what we perceive as doing our jobs, by virtue of just bringing in this whole new thing.
Yeah.
That people, you know, that people interface with, that they interact with, that they leverage as a tool. It's another, I mean, I view it as like any contractor out there that has a tool belt with hammers and tape measures and all that stuff. This is just another tool that's going to be in that tool belt, if you ask me.
So I think that's a really good starting point. And the key word that you said that I think about is the job. Right. So if you follow Clayton Christensen, right, one of the things he talked about is job theory. What is the job to be done? And if you go through the different jobs in this market, what are the jobs that people have to do to get that work done, to take care of a policyholder who had this event occur? And how do you make that job better? And that's fundamentally what you're talking about,
yeah, right,
in terms 100%. Of how you change the work that gets done, right? You have a post hole digger. You're not digging it by hand anymore with a shovel, right? Or you have a backhoe, right? How does that evolve over time? So just going back to the other example, and how does it become not only just more efficient, but higher quality outcomes? I used the analogy before where you look at how was a vehicle made 50 years ago. How is a vehicle made now, right?
Right.
And how did Japan influence that, even including total quality management, right? And how that's improved over a period. So I look at that just from the standpoint of just how a claim is serviced, right? If you think about it, the total work in process, as if it were like a manufacturing process. And what are those different iteration handoffs that can be improved by personal lines, commercial, so on and so forth, you know, focus on the property space. Auto's a little bit different, obviously, from an
agent perspective. I'm sitting here thinking about what Dave was saying about the next 100 years and how it's so difficult to build out that roadmap, not knowing what the next technology is. Right. I think about ChatGPT coming into our lives a few years ago and how that changed the way a lot of people. I know that technology's been there, but it's out in the public. I assume a lot of what you do, especially on the product side, is thinking out what will be the next transition technology, what will be coming. Because if you build on the tools that you have today, you're already outdated. I mean, is that difficult to think that far out and to build on things that you don't even know exist yet?
Well, if he wants 100%. To be president of the company, he better be good at it.
Well, I mean, everybody wants a crystal ball, right? Everybody wants to know what's going to be the next big thing. And candidly, you often invest in things that don't pan out because
think about the Apple car.
Well, the Apple car. But I even think something even more tangible, which is within 4 or 5 years ago, everybody was talking about blockchain.
Oh, right? Blockchain, yeah.
Well, CEO I heard talking about, they were talking about blockchain. How are we going to use blockchain?
Yeah.
There were some similar conversations that were going on with Verisk. How are we going to use blockchain? Nobody really knew what that meant. Nobody knew what that actually, like how we could operationalize blockchain technology, right? This whole distributed system concept. We really got that. And so we started investing in those types of things and realized, okay, maybe there's not so much of a fit. So often you go down, you know, some of these tangent roads to try and figure out and get ahead of some of those things because you can't predict the future. You don't know what the next big thing is. I can tell you, it feels fundamentally different than blockchain.
It does.
But there are those things. I think if you bought a bunch of NFTs a couple of years ago, man, you're probably not doing pretty well right now. But you're constantly trying to figure out what is that next big thing so that you can make sure that you are ahead of it as opposed to playing catch up, because that's not ever what you think.
So use that as a just kind of an example, when was the first electric car invented?
Oh yeah, it was back in the 1900s, early
1900s.
Yeah. Was it really? I don't even know.
Yeah, they had an electric car back then.
Huh.
Why did the petrol car take off as opposed to the electric?
I don't know.
It's resourcing and distribution, right? That's, I believe, why that took off.
Well, right? Yeah, there's lots of instances. Yeah, it's timing.
It's all about timing, right?
But now that's starting to switch.
What an incredibly consequential moment in our human history that was.
It changed the path. Absolutely. And so what is going to be that next thing that changes the path? I mean, I'm watching a Tesla drive out the window right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people still say, I'm not going to buy an electric car. 10 years ago, you wouldn't have bought an electric car. Today, maybe you warmed up to it. So what is that next kind of big leap that helps with the economies of scale, has the appropriate distribution, and who's crazy enough to go after it and make a dent and make a real difference?
So as the leader of your organization, does that explain some of your passion and interest that you have in AI? Is it by understanding it and using it like you have and like you do, an inspiration?
Yes.
Towards your product set?
Yes. On the productive good that those new capabilities will bring in driving different outcomes that are better for the industry.
Hmm.
That's what I think about every day. I think about that in terms of how we can improve the industry. And frankly, you know, I'm selfish too. I like to think about how I can make my life easy. Right? I'm in meetings all the time. I have lots of emails, lots of phone calls, a lot of things that make my life difficult. And so to the extent that I can leverage capabilities that make my life easier, I can also project how I can improve the lives of others.
Yeah.
And so that's part of how I think. And Dave does too.
Yeah.
Dave's an innovator. And I used to compete on innovation, and I think he won more often.
So I don't know if that's true.
You can't beat him, you know, join him.
Hire him. Right. Mm-hmm. If you can't beat him, promote him.
There for some years, artificial intelligence, machine learning, right, was about image capturing. How do we capture the right images? How do we get the right measurements? Now I hear a lot of, how do we automate the estimate? How do we use what we know to automate these estimates, to build these estimates quicker? Are you working on that? Is that anything that you're working on now? Can you talk a little bit about?
So I yes, we are absolutely working on automating. And the way that we're doing it is it's not in a fashion that you would think that one would think is a replacement for an estimator. Rather, it's an augmentation of the estimator. It's the it's providing additional detail and automating a lot more of that process that the estimator takes on. I mean, if you think about the way you estimate, and you think about how you look for line items, how you search through our price list, how you interface with the estimate in and of itself, there's a lot that can be done there that we can assist with. For instance, and you brought up Lee the concept of images and things like that. What I'm on a lot of different Facebook groups for estimators and contractors and adjusters, and we get a lot of questions on those where they ask questions such as, you know, here's a picture of this thing. What is it? You see it all the time. Like they don't necessarily know what it is. It could be a training issue. It could be, I just don't know, because it's a wild type of thing that I've never really encountered before. But we get a lot of those. Imagine being able to upload that into Xactimate, for instance, and Xactimate just tells you what that line item is, right? Instead of having to go asking a bunch of random people on a Facebook group, or on a forum, you actually get that detail back from the system, and the system tells you those different things. You think about how you search for line items, and you think about, I mean, even our Xact Expert functionality within Xactimate is really there to guide and lead you to the appropriate line item, so that you make sure that you are estimating appropriately based on the damage to the property.
Yeah,
and that's really the goal there, is to help augment. So anyway,
yeah. I mean, it goes back to the jobs theory at multiple levels, right? So what is the estimator's job and how do you make it more efficient? But I think if you lift it up a little bit higher, I think about the predictive outcomes we'd be able to generate. And if you think about like the steps in the process, a brand new claim comes in, empty shell, right? You have that as a data point, as a starting place, and then you have the outcome. Right.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of variety of steps in between that. There's variation in it. But as you do clustering and you find those types of claims that have similar progression, starting points, outcomes, there's a method to identifying what steps we can materially impact to make that more efficient. And I think that that's where you're going to see some really good progress is even behind the scenes. Let's say, for example, that as the claim comes in, sitting in an assignment queue, we make a prediction on what we believe that outcome will be, but
yeah.
We don't, it sits behind the scenes. And then once the claim hits that endpoint that we predicted, we measure the delta. And then you repeat it and you repeat it. And we talk about the volume of claims that are going through the system.
Oh, so many.
Accuracy. And then you're going to be able to make some decisions around how do I triage those to make better decisions, to get them to the right place, to maybe take them to the 90th yard, right? And then the next, you know, couple of steps are of what you definitely need that person to do to evaluate, make sure everything checked out. Like, can you imagine the efficiencies gains, the headaches, the ability, you know, for that estimator, that rep to put more focus on the customer where those otherwise redundant steps are taken out of the equation.
So,
that's where it's exciting.
So Aaron's describing the crystal ball right there. That's right.
I mean, before Rob asked here, I was just thinking with that, I mean, learning to predict the possible outcome of a claim helps with reserves. It helps with reserves are so important, and it helps to know when possible large losses are coming and when do we need to look at claims for possibly litigation. All these things could come out of it. And what you were saying, David, even narrowing down those options within the price list based on the assets that you uploaded, these are you're not going to be dealing with flooring, you only have roofing. Therefore, these are you don't have to come in and change the product all around. You just have to assist. You use it to assist and to make it and to help get that estimate done. I think that's great. I think that's a great way to use it.
And then there's all the decisioning that go into adjusting. Is this a covered loss?
Right.
Is it partial?
Oh, yeah.
What depreciation do I take? Do I have the right sales tax? Do I have, there's a whole host of things we can do to improve that process.
You sure can.
If you're a desk adjuster, and I don't know whether ice and water shield is required in this particular geography, having the product be more intelligent on what those outcomes should be is going to be massive. It's going
to
be great.
To tell you.
Yeah, to
you
tell
you. Right. Yeah. You don't even need to think of it. And that you said something that was really interesting to me, that what's going on behind the curtain, that you're looking at data and finding data that you might have never been able to find before or analyze before.
Yes.
And creating new data sources that help the whole darn thing learn, right?
It improves the predictability to where that, you know, coefficient increases, right? To where you can say, I have a higher confidence interval that this is going to be the outcome. Mm-hmm. And not then at least improve the process by which you didn't have to make so many manual choices that, you know, just distract you from everything else going on.
Mm-hmm. Remarkable. How's the pace of change now? Is it going... Is it faster than it used to be? Quicker than it used to be? I mean, like all this stuff that you're... you probably can't find enough people to help you make the changes fast enough.
I have a theory on that for what the future will likely look like on that.
Yeah.
You're embedding AI into the process, but you're also going to be leveraging AI to build it in the future.
Right.
Right. And so I look at that as being an accelerator for what the capability will bring. There's
that the AI will be doing the work as well.
Yes, I do believe that.
Not just giving the insight.
Yes. It will be, there's some capabilities out there right now where there's automated tasks where you can basically set the outcome and then you have multiple agents that build a plan and then take the steps to get to that outcome, including writing the code to do it. And we're experimenting with a lot of those capabilities that do significantly drive those outcomes, and we do so at a lower cost and with greater efficiency.
Amazing.
Crazy.
It's coming. It's still baby AI, as we call it, but it's coming.
So next year at the conference, do you think that there's a whole exciting new stuff, or does it just keep iterating, you know, a little at a time, which is more that way more the nature of the cultures that you sell into, right? I mean, all of us work with insurance carriers and we know they don't like to take big, enormous leaps forward. So they like to iterate.
Ethical bias in AI, that's an important thing that we're focused on, right? So
yeah, you have to be.
And jump, you know, to that next crazy level and cause a whole host of unintended consequences, right? As an example. So we're very careful with that. There's also the legality aspect of it. You look at some of these big insurance companies, they have massive data science team. They have capabilities to do this, but because they also have to take that very measured approach, that's why you're also seeing some of these massive leaps forward. But I think focusing on some of those smaller incremental changes that David was talking about, I think that's good for the industry, but at the same time, behind the scenes, being prepared for some of the larger leaps, right, that look like they happened overnight, they didn't.
Yeah.
If somebody's building something
right.
Under the radar to where when it's ready at a certain point in time that the industry's ready to adopt a big step, they're prepared. I think that's an important thing.
It's like we were talking about earlier, you have to, it's about being at the right place at the right time for that leap. And if you want to be ready for it when the timing is correct, but so you don't want to be caught behind it, you want to be ahead of it. But it's also, you know, I mean, we were talking yesterday, Xactware traditionally, we've had some insane innovations over the years that just were at the wrong time. We built an equivalent to what everybody knows as Howes, 25 years ago. Like it's incredible. And we have this brilliant idea where homeowners could enter information into a portal and all that, which is what Houses is at this point. But we had this brilliant idea 25 years too early. So you have to be really cautious because your defeat can be something as simple as, well, it's a brilliant concept. It's just too early and not, the world isn't ready for it.
And I would think that that's daunting. Right, because you guys are now playing in a world where change could come out of nowhere. That would be significantly impactful on a competitive level, right?
Oh, for sure. I mean
like something you didn't see, think of, or imagine that some other kid in, you know, Iowa in his basement is developing. I mean, who knows, right? And because the tools are more abundant and more powerful, right?
Yeah. The capability.
He doesn't need it. He doesn't necessarily need a team of 50 people.
Right.
I don't know what the right analogy is.
But that
has
a whole host of consequence. Think about the money that PE needs, right? In order to get a startup off the ground. That's changing fundamentally.
Yeah, 100%.
Mm-hmm. So you're gonna see all kinds of market shifts. And it's not just this industry, it's a variety of industries. Right. It's not just this company, correct. It's a variety of companies. There will be new winners and there'll be new losers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm certain of that. But I don't think anybody can predict what's going to be out there 5 years from now. I mean, if they solve for quantum computing, where it doesn't have to be at sub-zero temperature.
Right.
That's next level compounded with some of the large language models in AI. That's where it gets really fascinating in my
Is that Such a what cool we're going is that what we're gonna talk about at the next dinner?
Oh, assuming we're still eating by then.
or that we're invited.
I know. That.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say it's a higher likelihood you're gonna be invited than me.
I don't know. We'll see. I do respect the Sullivans. Maybe they'll invite us back.
They put on a good show.
They do. They do good work.
They do.
I hear it's a great time.
You could learn some things from that conference.
It's actually one of the few conferences where you go to the sessions and listen.
Yeah.
Rob always loves to go, and he always sends me messages like, I learned this. This is what I saw.
Awesome.
He goes there for the knowledge.
And you don't have to compete for other sessions, right? I attend this session, and then I go to the next session. Mm-hmm. And
that's pretty nice.
Yeah.
I love it.
Everybody in lockstep. But that's the benefit of having a smaller, in quotes, conference.
Yep.
That would be hard for you to achieve. But, listen, I can't thank you guys enough for doing this today.
Yeah,
And now we have a whole new, we like to say candidate when we're off line, we like to say sucker. with David, David, Big O, whatever you want to call him,
OBZ,
to have you on, we'd love to have a product show.
Oh yeah,
that would be. How would you feel about doing a product podcast with another chief product officer?
Bring it on! I'm ready.
That'd be fun. Interesting, huh?
That's fun. I think it'd actually be a lot of fun.
That'd be really, really interesting. And Mr. Bronco, you are always welcome on our podcast. Always.
Thank you. Yes. I appreciate it. It's an honor to be on your podcast. So thank you.
No, stop. No.
No, I'm serious.
It's to have people on of the two of your caliber is such a treat for us. And why we started this as a hobby. It still is.
Still is a hobby.
I mean, that's a lot of fun, though.
Still. So, we'll let you guys get back to your day job.
Yeah. Thank y'all so much for being on.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Always. Always. Bye now.
All right. Have a good one.
A podcast like that makes me realize the privilege that we have.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I mean, that we have access to the president and the chief product officer of arguably the most important platform in property insurance.
Yeah, being able to have good conversation. What the audience didn't get to hear was a 30-minute conversation we had beforehand, which was wonderful to have. That was I wish we would have recorded that conversation also, but being able to talk to some of the smartest people in our industry is always a delight.
A delight. And this crazy podcast has introduced us to many people like the Aaron Broncos and David Oberts of the world.
And that was our second. That was our second one with Aaron, right? Our second. We had
second
one last
or
year.
Third.
I think it was our
that
second.
He's been on. Yeah, he's a multi.
But not the last.
He's working towards his smoking jacket.
Oh yeah, it's coming.
He's getting there. Thank you to our production people. Thank you. I'll mention Al's name today, but I won't mention the other one because she was particularly difficult to me. Before we started today,
she called you out on a bet that you never paid.
She made an accusation that I can neither confirm nor deny.
Yeah, but you came pretty quick, so I kind of think you might have.
No, I said. So Alicia said that I owe her $50 on a bet about a soft wand.
Yeah. That she
about an Asafwan episode that she says that she made happen. And this is how I feel about Alicia. Mm-hmm. If she says it, it's true.
There you go.
Okay. So yeah. $50 is on its way.
You did K very quickly.
Well, you know, I mean,
Alicia, let us know next week.
Is your integrity worth $50? Mine, maybe $48.
I think if you thought it wasn't true, you would have been like, absolutely not. I think inside you're like,
well,
oh,
no,
I
could hear myself saying it.
You're right. I don't remember saying it
because we had Asafwan on in like 2020.
A long time ago.
It was early COVID. The first time we had him on was early COVID. Because remember he had kids running around in the background or something.
See, you remember that. I don't remember that.
I remember who's been on the podcast.
You remember almost every single person we've ever had on. You're like, oh, and their face, even though for the first half, we didn't do video. You're like, oh, that person, we had them on the podcast. Gabe Halimi in the middle of a restaurant in Las Vegas. I'm like, how in the world do you know this?
Gabe Halimi.
Yeah.
He was,
but we digress.
A very early big success story. In Flow by Moen. Yeah. And where's Gabe Halimi today?
I have absolutely no idea.
No idea. I think he's on a beach somewhere, probably.
I hope so.
And if Gabe, he is, he should invite us. Listen. He should invite us. That's right. If you're listening, yeah. Gabe.
Yeah. Come on back. We want to hear.
We want to hear what's new. Anyways, thank you to everybody. And until next time.
Goodbye, everybody.